There certainly does not seem to be an agreed upon plan by Republicans how to replace Obamacare. We haven't heard any real details. Do Democrats have an obligation to do more than just not help the Republicans in their efforts?
You mean to say that Democrats should work with Republicans to repeal this legislation? No, I don't think our job is to work with them to repeal the legislation. What our job is to work with them to improve the legislation. Is the Affordable Care Act perfect? Far from it. It needs to be improved. We wait eagerly for the Republicans to come forward with a proposal that will improve the Affordable Care Act. Let's work together.
When he mentions that it needs to be improved, remember, the ACA, what is now known as the ACA, this was the Republican plan. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to The Fire You Can't Put Out, episode number 206. Yo, Melvin on the mic, here to talk with you. Now, I know all the oxygen in the room is being sucked out right now by the fact that Donald Trump fired James Comey, the guy who made it possible for Donald Trump to win the freaking election. Now, it wasn't the only factor, but it was not a small factor. But I think the firing of Comey does a couple of things. And the first thing it does is it takes the focus off of this damn bill that they just passed that's going to strip millions of people of their health care. And of course, the other thing that the Trump administration thinks that it does is it takes all of the focus off of the Russian investigation, which maybe they're going to go free now and maybe nothing will come out of it, blah, 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 blah. But we're going to focus on that first thing that I said, because I'm certain of it. Now that we're talking about Comey, now that we're talking about war with Afghanistan, now that we're talking about war with North Korea, whoa, I'm getting flashbacks about that whole lesser of two evils thing all of a sudden. But I digress. We're no longer talking about the healthcare bill that just passed the House. So kudos to my representative, because she, Jamie Herrera Butler, she voted against it. Good for her, but bad, Jamie. She still refuses to meet with her constituents, and she's not alone. And I think I might know why, but I'll get into that in a little bit. But I want this healthcare thing to stay on the front burner. See, I'm a man in my upper 30s, right? I'm about to hit 40, and after 40 comes 50. And after 50 comes 60. I don't need to teach you how to count. You know this. But once I get to my 60s, of course at 65, I'll be able to get on Medicare with everyone else. And I hear tons of great things about that program. But it's that period in the 50s and the early 60s that I'm a little bit concerned about. Because for older Americans, that's where most of their healthcare dollars go. Concerned about myself, yes, in the long term, because eventually I'm going to get there. I'm going to get old. I'm going to get frail and all the rest. But more immediately, what about the people that are there right now? Or what about the people that aren't old and frail? Say you're a baby born with a heart condition, a la Jimmy Kimmel's baby. There's a lot of folks that really need healthcare right now. And America still can't seem to get this right. And what passed in the House has absolutely nothing to do with healthcare. It's all about the tax cut for the millionaires and billionaires. I've talked about this already. And we're so desperate. Right? The Republicans are so desperate to pass something, anything, so that they can erase the fact that Barack Obama was ever president. Right? That Democrat, that black guy that took their plan and made something out of it. But for the section of the bill that does talk somewhat about healthcare, I want to lay out a couple of things. First of all, yeah, okay, they keep pre-existing conditions, right? You can't be dropped for pre-existing conditions, but your health insurance company can charge you up to $147,000 more for your health insurance. And what counts as a pre-existing condition covers about half of America. One of the things is that your employer no longer has to offer you health care anymore. Now, a lot of us that get health care through our employer, we feel safe and maybe we're not going to be affected by the whole Obamacare thing or the whole Trump care thing. But in the new bill that just passed, that's on its way to the Senate, your employer no longer has to provide you with that health care. So if they want, if they are so cold, they can throw you into the open market that is Trump Care. When we were debating the ACA back in 2009, when we were debating Obamacare, I remember folks, a lot of conservative folks saying, look, if it's so great, right, why doesn't Congress have Obamacare then? And then that became a part of the bill. They listened to what people said and they said, you know what? Okay, Congress will have Obamacare. In the new bill that passed, Trump Care, they have specifically exempted themselves in Congress from this bill. So dig this. You and I get Trump Care, and our premiums will go up anywhere. And this is not the full cost. This is how much more you're going to pay for your health insurance. If you have a pre-existing condition, and by the way, being previously pregnant is now considered a pre-existing condition. Your health care will now go up anywhere between, I'd say, $3,000 and $147,000 per year. So yeah, they kept in the pre-existing condition thing, but you might have to pay $100,000 a year just for your health insurance. Oh, you don't make $100,000 a year? Well, you live in America. It's a Christian nation. Don't worry about it. We're going to take care of you. On page 33 of the bill, and yeah, it's not as long as the Obamacare bill was, because really, it's just a tax cut. But in page 33 of the bill, and this has been pretty widely reported, one of the ways that it mentions, that the bill mentions, that it cuts costs, is the fact that people will die before they'll be able to get care. Let me repeat that. In the bill, it's like page 32, 33, I can't remember which one, it says that one of the ways that Trump Care, and we're going to call it that, hashtag Trump Care, one of the ways Trump Care is going to save money is because people are going to die before they can collect their care. So they'll pay the premiums, but they will die before they get seen, before they get helped. So we get Trump Care, and Congress gets to keep Obamacare, the awful Obamacare, for themselves. So this sounds to me like we were lied to. There was so much consternation about the ACA, about the Obamacare bill, you know, as imperfect as it was. But we weren't lied to our faces about the bill. And now that the bill has become law, people are pretty happy with it, right? I mean, it could be made better, but people are getting their care. It's saving lives. And so it's become pretty clear that we were lied to by Trump and by the Republicans, or as Jeffrey Lohr likes to call it, no, it's not a lie. He just speaks Americanese. This from the Washington Post. So there was a segment on CNN on Anderson Cooper's show. Lohr and seven other commentators, quoting here, discussed the president's business claims that Barack Obama had wiretapped Trump Tower during the campaign. When the conversation turned to Trump's credibility, Lohr appeared to be the lone guest unwilling to call the president a liar. Trump, he said, was speaking Americanese. So, ladies and gentlemen, we weren't lied to. The president was just speaking American ease. And why the hell is it ease? But as I mentioned before, this has nothing to do with healthcare. Yeah, there's going to be some detrimental things that'll happen with regard to healthcare. And costs are going to go up. People are going to die. I mean, money is going to be saved. But let's talk about the real part of the bill, the part that was really concerning. And that was the tax cut part of it. Because Obamacare was paid for with a 3% increase on capital gains tax. 3%. There were a group of wealthy people that said that they absolutely cannot live without their money. Oh my God, hand to mouth. Right? So we got to get them their money back. And so we're going to strip billions out of the healthcare, out of our healthcare system, you know, to take care of our people, because the rich people, they really don't have enough money. The idea, and I'm surprised that this is still a thing. Right, in 2017, that this is still a thing, that we're still arguing about this. Any economist that is worth anything knows that Reaganomics does not work. The Laffer curve is a lie. I want to talk about that for a minute. There's an article over at the Atlantic by Derek Thompson, and this is back in 2012, because we've been talking about this for a long damn time. There are articles that came out this year, but I like this one in particular. Now, this is economics, so if this is boring, you skip ahead a few minutes, but I love economics. Okay, quoting here, in 1990, President George H.W. Bush raised taxes, and GDP growth increased over the next 5 years. In 1993, President Bill Clinton raised the top marginal tax rate, and GDP growth increased over the next 5 years. In 2001 and 2003, President Bush cut taxes, and we faced a disappointing expansion, followed by a Great Recession. Does this story prove that raising taxes helps GDP? No. Does it prove that cutting taxes hurts GDP? No. But it does suggest that there's more to an economy than just taxes. And then slashing taxes is not a guaranteed way to accelerate economic growth. So there's the broken window idea of economics. If you want to raise your country's GDP, you could just break all the windows in America. Yeah, that would cause a gigantic growth in that industry. That would raise GDP. But all you did was just destroyed a bunch of stuff. So that's not really the best way to go about it. And the plan for them is to just drop taxes and that will make everything better. It's not going to make everything better, but they'll go ahead and continue to push the idea that it's making everything better. Quoting here from an article called Taxes in the Economy, an Economic Analysis of the Top Tax Rates Since 1945. Analysis of 6 decades of data found that the top tax rates had little association with saving, investment, or productivity growth. However, the study found that reductions of capital gains taxes and top marginal tax rates have led to greater income inequality. Past studies cited in the report have suggested that a broad-based tax rate reduction can have a small to modest positive effect on economic growth, or no effect on economic growth. Well into the 1950s, the top marginal tax rate was well above 90%. Now, people think that taxes were above 90%. No. The top marginal tax rate. So if you're with the way, way upper income bracket, not like $250,000, but like $1 million, right? That was in the 90%. And that was to encourage people that were in that tax bracket to put in more money at the bottom. See, let's say you own a factory, right? And, you know, you're making a modest wage, you know, you're paying your employees a modest wage, and then your factory starts doing really well. You know, let's say you're the CEO and you're making $1 million a year. And you're doing really well, and you go, you know what? I'm going to be able to take home $2 million a year. And you're doing even better, and you go, I can take home $3 million a year. You as the CEO, right? But you're not really doing anything at the bottom. And your company grows, and it gets bigger, and it gets bigger. And for you know what? You're making $100 million a year. Now, wait. Is the country doing better now that you, one guy, are making $100 million a year? Let me say this. $100 million a year. Think how many lower tier wages that could pay. If you're making $100 million, you as one guy making $100 million a year, let's say that kind of money could pay for the wages of, say, of just for the number, say, 1,000 people at the bottom, right? At the bottom of the income ladder, or in the middle class part of the income ladder. Let's say that you're making $100 million, you know, and we could take half of that money and pay people at the bottom tier of the economic income ladder, okay? So are you paying as much as those people would at the bottom if they had that money? Are you buying 1,000 cars? Are you buying 10,000 pairs of pants? You know, are you eating as much as, you know, 1,000 people at the... No, of course you're not. That money is just being stashed away. You're just keeping more for yourself. But you're making $100 million a year. And good on you for your success. So the top marginal tax rate today is 35%. Both the real GDP and the real per capita GDP were growing more than twice as fast in the 1950s than in the 2000s. At the same time, the average tax rate paid by the top 10th of a percent fell from 50 to 25% in the last 60 years, while their share of income has increased from 4.2% to 12.3% before the recession. When the top marginal tax rate was above 90%, so let's say we make it 91% after you personally, one guy, bring in $3 million for yourself. We say everything outside of that, you're going to pay a 91% tax rate. So you as a business owner go, well, I suppose I will merely pay myself $3 million. I know, hand to mouth, forgive me. I'll pay myself as the CEO $3 million. And then the other $97 million I'll kick down to my employees in the form of higher wages, new equipment, expanding the business, hiring more employees, more money down there. But instead, we still believe in this absolutely amazing idea that if we just give more money to the people at the top, then things will be better. It's never been borne out. It's never been proven by studies or statistics or anything. You know, and there's any number of books on economics and economists that are willing to talk about this. You can find videos on YouTube, and don't watch the libertarian economists. Those people aren't economists. They're children. They believe in unicorns and tuna fish with rainbows in their eyes and crap that doesn't exist. You know, those people aren't economists. But if you listen to the real economists, you know, people like Reich and people like Krugman and people like Ravi Batra, if you listen to those people, they'll tell you the Laffer curve is a lie and it doesn't work. All it does is increase inequality. But that's the point. Stripping us of our wages, the wages that we use to survive on, that's to preserve the caste system. Stripping us of our health care, or making it so so exorbitant that we can't afford it, that we don't even get to live on this planet anymore because we can't afford it, that's to preserve the caste system. It has nothing to do with economic growth. It has nothing to do with making the economy better. It has nothing to do with making the country better. It's all about preserving the caste system. You at the very bottom that are willing to work for terribly low wages, you that have no worker protections, you that have no safety protections, you that can't afford, you know, your health care, you can't afford food, you can't afford housing. There's a story recently in one of our local papers. So the Portland, Oregon area is where I live. Home prices around here are just skyrocketing. It's becoming, I'm locked in at the rate that I have for my house, you know, the price and the rate, locked into this 30-year mortgage. I'll probably pay it off in 15, if not sooner. And that's because I'm saving all of my money. But I think that if I wanted to buy a house now, and we've got some friends that live about an hour away that really want to move closer to the city, but they can't afford it. They could have afforded it here 4 years ago. And by the way, they're making more money. They could have afforded it 4 years ago, but they can't afford it now. There's any number of people in Portland right now, older people that are retired. So they're just living off their retirement accounts. But because the value of their home keeps exponentially increasing, now, so the relationship of what my taxes are to what I pay for my mortgage, there's a yawning chasm between them. So let's say I pay, for number's sake, we'll say I pay $2,500 a year in taxes on my home, right? But I pay, let's say I pay $25,000 a year for my mortgage. So my taxes are about 10% of what my mortgage is, right? And so if I'm not paying, so let's say I'm retired and I'm not paying that $25,000 a year anymore for the mortgage on my home. I'm only paying the $2,500, which is what we plan for when we do retirement. We say we're not going to have the cost of housing anymore. And 2,500 is 10% of 25,000. It's a smaller number, and it seems like it should be manageable, especially if you're on a retirement income. But what's happening is the values of the homes are going up so fast, you know, so crazy, that the retirees are not able to afford to stay in their homes within city limits anymore, because the taxes have gotten so insane that even though they've got, you know, relative to what their mortgage would be, they've got this very small amount to pay, they still can't afford to pay it because it's going up so fast. You say, well, Melvin, let's cut taxes on everything, cut all the damn taxes. Government gets too much money anyway. Now hold on. I'm not going to defend the property tax. I think it's an insane way to pay for education, because that too preserves the caste system. If you live in a higher income neighborhood, then they're going to collect more taxes, which means that those schools are going to get more money, which means that those schools are going to have better outcomes. If you have the projects, you know, or some of these other places where I grew up, the schools are terrible. They don't have the resources they need. They don't have the staff that they need. You know, they don't have the upgrades that they need. And it's not because teachers are terrible. It's not because public education is crap. It's because they're underfunded. All of my teachers, even when I was in the dark depths of the ghetto, all of my teachers were fan-effing-tastic to me. They were so great. You know, and they were so caring, and they spent so much time with me one-on-one. Like, they really cared about our futures. They really cared about how things were going to turn out for us. But we've got it set up that where property taxes pay for education. And the other thing that it does is, because property taxes, the way we collect them, you can lose your home if you're unable to pay those taxes. So yeah, it's a smaller cost of housing, but that's insane to me too, that you can buy a house, own it outright, but if you become limited on your resources, you could still lose the home that you own outright. Yeah, so there's a better, but that, once again, that is to help preserve the caste system. All of this is. So obviously, I'm going to argue for those at the top to pay more. And don't tell me that that's just going to cause the cost of everything to go up, because that's a lie. Because when their costs go down, they're not passing that on to us. They're only passing it on to us when the costs go up. And by the way, if you're making $3 million a year, you're doing fine, right? If you can't, you know, if you're, say, let's say you're making $100 million a year, you know, and then your taxes go up, so you're only making $75 million a year, you're going to pass that on to me? Bugger off. No, nobody's buying that. You know, and it's wild that, but we're so sensitive about our wallets. We're so sensitive about how much we pay for everything. And we should be. You know, we as working people, our resources are limited. But those who control the message, they know how to get us to come around to their way of thinking. They know how to get us to come around and support the caste system. And that is by threatening our very meager wallets. They say, look, you raise taxes on me, I'm just going to pass it down to you. And that's a lie. That's not what's going to happen. And let us not forget that without us, these people are nothing. They're in the upper crust, right? They're in the upper class. They like us to think that we need them. And we largely believe that we need them. But that's not really the way it works. They need us 1,000 times more than we need them.
I'm wondering, when you heard the president today saying, quote, nobody knew that healthcare could be so complicated. I thought nobody knew healthcare would be anything but complicated, but apparently the president said nobody knew that it would be so complicated. Were you surprised
by
that?
Well, some of us who were sitting on the Health Education Committee, who went to meeting after meeting after meeting, who heard from dozens of people, who stayed up night after night trying to figure out this thing. Yeah, we got a clue. When you provide health care in a nation of 320 million people, yeah, it is very, very complicated. And maybe now, maybe the president, some of the Republicans understand you can't go beyond the rhetoric. We're going to repeal the Affordable Care Act. We're going to repeal Obamacare, and everything will be wonderful. A little bit more complicated than that. We remain today, and let's not forget it, the only major country on earth that doesn't guarantee health care to all people. We pay the highest prices by far for prescription drugs. Let's address those issues. Let's get beyond rhetoric.
I want to make two predictions right now, and I will come back to this microphone, and I will own up to the ones that are good, but I will also own up to the ones that do not happen. So here's what Melvin is predicting. Trump is not going to survive this year. Well, Lear, let me put a qualifier on that. If he is able to kill the Russia investigation, which he's trying to do right now, if he's able to kill that investigation, then there's a pretty solid chance not only will he survive his presidency, but I think he'll likely be reelected too. I know, I don't mean to make you sad, but just follow me. But if he is unable to kill this, I mean, what he's doing right now looks so Nixonian that even the Nixon library is going, no, 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 this guy's way worse. Nixon didn't do the crap this guy's doing. Holy hell. But if he is not able to kill the Russia investigation, then I don't think he's going to survive the rest of the year as president. And you go, well, God dang it, that just means that the Pence is going to be president too. Dude. No. I don't know that Pence is going to last all that well, too. Even Pence is becoming visibly perturbed, shaken, flabbergasted. I don't know what word I'm looking for here. Because Pence will go up in front of the mics and he'll say, da-da-da-da-da. Right? Just for an example, he'll walk up and he'll say, ABC, right? ABC, and they'll go, Vice President Pence, ABC, and he'll go, ABC. And then they'll go to President Trump, and they'll go, President Trump, Vice President Mike Pence said ABC, and he'll go, no A, no B, no C. And they'll go, Vice President Pence just said ABC, huh? ABC. And he'll go, absolutely not. No, no, no. I'm the best ever. I've got the greatest hair. I've got the biggest crowds ever. No A, no B, no C. And Pence is becoming just visibly pissed. You know, as I understand, a Christian man, he just hold it all inside, you know, not be alone with women that aren't his wife and all the rest. And I don't think Trump will be impeached. I think he'll resign. I think the articles of impeachment will become a serious topic of conversation, and he'll just go, bye-bye, I didn't want to be here anyway. So, if he survives if he's able to kill the Russia investigation, I think he'll serve out his 4 years, maybe even serve out 8. But if he doesn't, I don't think he'll make it to the end of the year. So that's one prediction. The other prediction, we are just a couple of years away. Maybe even before the end of what would be the end of Trump's term, from getting single-payer health care. Now, I feel like this prediction is way more bold than the other one I just made. But let me tell you why. Not a lot of us were super happy, jubilant about the ACA. Right? We as progressives, we wanted something better than what we had before, right? Before, we had an entire truckload of manure, right? And let's say that the ACA was either the emptying of that truckload of manure. Go, hey, we're getting rid of this freaking manure. Or it's just a wagon of manure, you know? Because there's still some things that we don't like about it, but it's not the gigantic pile of crap that healthcare was before. And what we, as progressives, saw the ACA as was not this super awesome thing. Because remember, the Heritage Foundation came up with the ACA. We didn't see this gigantic, great God thing. No, we saw it as the first step to single payer. And now that we have Trump Care, now that Trump Care has passed the House, and all of those deeply religious men of God, those white men of God in the House of Representatives, we're cheering and celebrating and drinking crappy piss yellow beer, so excited that they get to strip millions of people of their health care. Now that that has passed, and once people see that that is not, we're not just going from our wagon, and I understand my analogy here is imperfect, but follow me. So much poop talk, I know. We're going to go from the wagon of poop, all right? So you go, oh, we're going back to this truckload of poop. Truckload? No. Oh, no. This is a warehouse. This is a warehouse full of manure. And it's not just one warehouse. It's an entire city of warehouses filled with nothing but manure. So completely useless and nobody likes it. Nobody wants it. But I think that is going to push the conversation. Because once, let's say it passes the Senate, right? And it looks pretty unlikely that it's going to right now, right? It's gone to the Senate. They've already said that it's dead. But let's say that it passes the Senate and people start getting their premium bills. And they're tens and 20 and 30 and $40,000 a year for coverage because you decided to get pregnant and you now have a pre-existing condition of previously being pregnant. When that happens, people are going to flip their lids. But nobody is going to want to ask for Obamacare back. When the Obamacare debate was going on, I said, kill it all, start all over again. Right? And now that it looks like we might get Trump care, I don't think that they're going to want to say, let's go back to Obamacare. Because remember, they spent all that time screaming about how it was socialism and kill grandma and all this other stuff that it really wasn't. They're not going to be able to say with a straight face, could we get Obamacare back? They're going to say, let's kill it and start over. And what's going to be waiting in that very spot when it is time to start over is what's being referred to right now as H.R. 676. And this was introduced into the House on January 24th, 2017. So just a couple of days after Trump was inaugurated, this was introduced in the House. And it's got dozens of co-sponsors. And what H.R. 676 is it's single-payer Medicare for all legislation. And what that does is it allows us to buy into, because we already have a single-payer system. We've got Medicare. And what this will do was it will eventually drop the age of eligibility for Medicare. It will allow other people to buy into Medicare. Now, it's not going to immediately kill private for-profit health insurance, but once people are able to buy into Medicare, and I want to clear up some myths about this, by the way, then the health insurance companies, if they want to retain anybody, they're going to have to straighten up and fly right. Now, on a microcosm, on a much smaller scale, on February 17th, 2017, the California legislature introduced single payer into their state, just in California, and that is significant, and I'll tell you why. You go, well, I don't live in California. Yeah, but you live in America, bucko, so listen up. So in California, California's got tens of millions of people. Now, they tried to do this in Vermont with Green Mountain Care, but Vermont is too small. You need to have a good size pool because you're spreading out risk. And I think in the entire state of Vermont, I don't think that there's even a million people. So it wasn't able to work on that smaller scale. But California is gigantic. There's a pretty solid chance that they're going to be able to make it work. And you go, but I live in a state. I live in Montana or some of these other states that have also a relatively small population. But yeah, but the gigantic states, Texas, New York, California, those states with larger populations will help pay for the smaller states when you spread it over all 50. When they got single payer in Canada, it started in one province. When it did well there, it moved to another province. When it did well there, it moved to another province, and now the entire country has it. And America, I think that you're going to be looking at the same kind of thing. So we have it in the House, and of course it's not moving anywhere right now, H.R. 676, because the Republicans aren't going to let it, because it helps people. It threatens the caste system. I understand that I've potentially introduced a phrase into your lexicon, but remember that, when we do dumb things like war, we spend all this money on war that doesn't make us safer, and all it does is cost us tons of money. That helps preserve the caste system. Why? Because it's not the wealthy that go fight and die. It's us, right? And then they fill us with pride and they go, you should be proud. You're fighting for your country. You should be proud. You know, to go over there and die for nothing. And then the military contractors, the folks who make all the tanks and the bombs and the guns, they make tons of money. And then the perpetual fear that's instilled in us with these wars, that keeps us afraid. That keeps us at bay. That also helps preserve the caste system. So it's expensive, it's ineffective, and it does nothing for us, the working people, but it helps preserve the caste system. Recently, Attorney General Jeff Sessions came out and said that they're going to go back to the old way of fighting the drug war. And they're not going to do what Duterte in the Philippines is doing, but what they are going to do is they are going to bring back mandatory minimum sentences for if you get busted even with a joint. You're going to prison for decades. Now, wait a minute. Couple of things. First of all, if you have a drug problem, prison does nothing for that. You know, you can get drugs in prison. And I know people that have been to prison. You get drugs, it doesn't do anything for that. So first of all, if drugs are a problem, it doesn't treat the problem. And then locking you up for life, it doesn't make America safer. It doesn't make America better. It doesn't help you get problems. It doesn't help you get treatment for your drug problem, but it does cost a ton of money. It does strip you of your freedom. If ever you get out of prison, it strips you of your right to vote, right? And it costs tons and tons of money. It preserves the caste system. That's really what it's about. Single payer would threaten that system. So this from Public Citizen, some of the things that you've heard about single payer, what the problem is with single payer, how bad single payer is, how it's... By the way, we're the last developed nation in the world to do this. Everyone else has done it. We haven't done it. Why? Because, frankly, we're not very bright. And we tend to believe people that do nothing but feed us lies. So, quoting here from Public Citizen, the myth, right? Single payer is government-run healthcare. No, what you're thinking about is the Veterans Administration. Under single payer, you get a healthcare card, and you go to any doctor and any hospital in the United States. Doctors are not employees of the government. Let me say that again. Doctors are not employees of the government. Hospitals remain in private hands, and you get your choice of doctor and hospital. The bill is merely paid by somebody with a green eye shade, you know, just a numbers guy, that's not trying to make $1 million an hour for himself as the CEO of a healthcare company. Just somebody who only pays the bills. And this drops the overhead. Right now, I think the average overhead for a health insurance company, and it's been higher than this before, certainly was higher than this before the ACA, but the overhead is 20%, you know, or there or north of there for a private for-profit health insurance company. So whatever your premiums are, 20% just goes right out the window right away. You get absolutely nothing for it. And when you're talking about, say, Medicare, it's 3%, like 2.5%, 3%. Much smaller overhead. Myth. Single payer will lead to rationing like in Canada. Holy crap, I hear this so much I could punch walls. Right now in the United States, the private health insurance companies ration our care. Let me say that again. In the United States, private for-profit health insurance companies ration our care. They tell us what we can and cannot have. And sometimes that's based on what we can or we're willing to pay. If you don't have health insurance, you don't get health care. More than 30 million Americans currently lack health insurance. That's why 120 Americans die every day from health care. Christians, fundamentalist Christians, please come closer to the speaker if you would. If you've got headphones on, that probably sounded weird to you. 120 people die a day because they don't have access to health insurance. You know how many people die every day in Canada because they don't have health insurance? They die for other reasons, but not for lack of health insurance. Zero. There are some problems in the Canadian system, but most of what you hear about long lines is health insurance propaganda. Myth. Costs will skyrocket under single payer. Single payer is the only health care reform that will save enough money to insure everyone. By eliminating the health insurance industry, we will save $500 billion a year. But Melvin, saving $500 billion a year? What if we don't want to save $500 billion a year? What if we would like to identify with our captors? What if we want to continue to remain in economic enslavement and continue paying lots and lots of money and getting nothing in return? What if we all have Stockholm Syndrome and you're threatening that right now, Melvin? What if we, what if $500 billion a year? Trump wanted to get rid of Meals on Wheels, which feeds old people, right? Which costs several million dollars a year. Gonna save us some money by killing old people. And people go, yeah, get rid of it. Screw it. It's too much money. Government shouldn't be involved in that anyway. Leave it up to the churches. Well, if you're that jazzed that you'll kill old people to save a few million, then you should be super cool with wanting to save $500 billion a year. By eliminating the health insurance industry, we can save $500 billion a year or more in administrative costs and profits, gold-plated faucets, and all that crap you hear about. We then use the money to insure those who lack insurance and fully cover those who are underinsured. Yes, more people will be seeking health care because they will not have insurance, but they will be taking care of medical problems early, thus preventing costly treatment later. And make no mistake about this, when we open up the system to more people, those who have long-term problems that are going to be insanely expensive to take care of, those folks are going to come forward. But if you're, as a conservative, uncomfortable with how much money it's going to cost to take care of people, right? If that just breaks your little conservative heart, it's going to cost so much money to take care of sick people, just pretend you're killing them. Just pretend that you're sending them off to Iraq and Afghanistan to be effing killed. And maybe that will put a smile on your face. Maybe then you won't mind spending the money. Myth. Drugs will be more difficult to get under single payer. Wrong, wrong, wrong. The drug industry would have you believe that there will be less research and development under a single payer system. In fact, much medical research is currently funded by the National Institutes of Health. That's why Trump wanted to kill it. Under single payer, this money would grow. Also, drugs would be cheaper under single payer. When all patients are under one system, the payer wields a lot of clout. For example, the Veterans Administration gets a 40% discount on drugs because of its buying power. The single payer buying power is the main reason why other countries' drug prices are lower than ours. That's why we go to Canada for drugs. Now you know why the drug industry is so opposed to single payer. I want to talk about the whole drug cost for just a moment. This from BuzzFeed. Ontario just announced free prescription drugs for anyone under 25. Now, I know free isn't really free. Somebody's paying for it. But there's no cost to the end user. Follow me now. The Ontario government, quoting here, just announced that starting in 2018, it will cover the cost of prescription drugs for anyone under 25. It's called the PharmaCare Promise. And it's the biggest item in the Liberal budget released recently in Canada. The program will cover the cost of more than 4,300 prescription drugs for young people in the province. Coverage will be available to anyone under 25 regardless of income. Quote, we recognize that families are struggling with the increased cost of living, so we're doing more to help with everyday costs. This according to Ontario Finance Minister Charles Souza. The prescription drug plan was unveiled just days after Ontario's NDP leader, Andrea Horwath, released her own PharmaCare plan to cover 125 of the most commonly prescribed drugs if she becomes premier following next year's election. Ontario will also start funding Mifgizmiso. I'm sorry, I don't speak Canadian. Which is, in their country, the abortion pill. It's RU486. Which can cost as much as $400. Can you imagine, here in America, if we said, we're going to pay for the prescriptions of all people under 25, and we're going to cover the abortion pill. That's right, we're going to cover RU486. Now, once again, I understand that some of my conservative friends are going to, I don't want to pay for abortion. Hold on. Easy there, Tiger, easy. Just pretend that we're spending the money to kill brown people in a faraway land. Maybe then you'll be okay with it. All right, let's get back into our facts and myths. Single payer, this is another myth, will cover less than the insurance that I have right now. Wrong. All kinds of wrong, with extra wrong sauce on top. For the majority of Americans, single payer will be a vast improvement. All medically necessary care would be funded through the single payer. including doctor's visits, hospital care, prescriptions, mental health services, nursing home care, rehab, home care, eye care, and dental care, which in America we consider cosmetic, even though you freaking use your teeth to eat. Your teeth stop your jaw from collapsing and making you look like a meth addict. Also, your teeth go into your bloodstream, which goes into the rest of your body, which if things are introduced into, say, those abscesses, you can get sick and you can die. It's not cosmetic, but it's cosmetic to our industries, to our health insurance industry, because it costs more money. It could cost them more money. And they're trying to keep the caste system in place. Melvin's repeating himself. An enlightened single payer will also result in a sharp increase in public health funding to prevent disease. No more bills, no more deductibles, no more co-pays, and fewer sicker people. Now, this article that I'm reading says $500 billion. I've read higher. I've read over $600 billion that we spend completely unnecessarily on keeping our horrible, no-good, very bad system in place. Hundreds of millions of dollars on nothing. Just imagine you walked into, say, a building, right? And there's just, and there's money just piled up all over the place, right? Say it's the middle of winter. Another imperfect analogy. Stick with Melvin. And there's just money stacked to the ceiling all the way around this entire building. And somebody is cutting open those bundles of cash and it's spilling to the floor. And someone else is taking that money and they're shoveling it into a furnace so that they can stay warm. There are better, more effective ways to stay warm, but we in America have decided that that is a better way to stay warm. Yeah, it's a gigantic waste. And the amount of BTUs, the amount of heat put out by the burning of a single $100 bill is not much, right? But all of those hundreds of billions of dollars, man, you might keep that building warm all freaking day, but it did cost you $600 billion. When you could have just took some dry wood for a couple bucks, or maybe plugged in a heater for a few more bucks, and heated it that way. See, that's the kind of efficiency that we're talking about. Single payer will cost me more than I'm paying for private health insurance right now. And that's called propaganda. That's what you're being told. The vast majority of Americans will pay about the same or less than they're paying now. And instead of paying premiums to a private health insurance company, most of us will pay a similar amount just in taxes instead. There will be no deductible, and you can go see any doctor or check into any hospital in the United States. You walk in, you give them your card that says you're an American, right? We're not just, this isn't for everybody. It says you're an American, you live here, you're paying taxes, and you're going to get taken care of, period. Now, conservatives should like this plan because this is going to save a lot of money. This is going to save a lot of lives. But I understand if some of my conservative friends, you're just not comfortable with this. I don't want to pay for other people's health care. Fine, just pretend it's killing brown people in a faraway land and maybe then you'll be okay with it.
Are you authorized to speak for Representative Zeldin?
I am speaking for him right now.
Okay.
So you know that.
So the Affordable Care Act, one of the provisions is that insurance companies have to dedicate 85% of your premium to actually delivering health care. Does Representative Zeldin support or oppose that part of the Affordable Care Act? Okay. The Affordable Care Act guarantees that women cannot be charged more for their premiums than men. Does Representative Zeldin support or oppose that part of the Affordable Care Act?
Again, I can get you that information.
Okay. The Affordable Care Act guarantees that children can stay on their parents' health care until they're 26. Does Representative Zeldin support or oppose that part of the Affordable Care Act? You know where I'm going with this.
So right now we are on recess. Congress is on recess. And so people are, I mean, some representatives are out meeting with their constituents right now. We call those representatives Democrats because there's still quite a few Republicans, my representative included, that are absolutely refusing to meet with people. And I can understand why, because you as a population, you as a citizenry, you sound way more informed. See, I've been on this mic for years now. barking and pissing and moaning about health care and taxes and all these other and economics and all these things that affect us all, right? And I've been doing so after reading tons of articles and spending all of my time with my nose inside books, and I get on the mic and I go, blah, 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 I'm so smart, listen to me. But when I listen to these people at these town halls now, listen to how informed they sound, and it's fantastic. I'm loving this. And I love listening to this audio. And I go, thank you. Oh, my work is not done here. But man, I'm getting some help. And it's pretty fantastic. So the representatives who are refusing to meet with their people, that is what they're afraid of. They're afraid of you standing up and saying something true. They're afraid of you standing up and knowing what the hell you're talking about. And they're afraid of it being recorded and then going on the internet and then potentially going viral.
My name is Jesse Bohan and I'm in your district. It's from my understanding the ACA mandate requires everybody to have insurance because the healthy people pull up the sick people, right? And as a Christian, my whole philosophy in life is pull up the unfortunate.
Yes.
Okay? So the individual mandate, that's what it does. The healthy people pull up the sick.
Yes.
If we take those people and we put them in high-risk insurance pools, they're costlier and there's less coverage for them. That's the way it's been in the past, and that's the way it will be again. So we are effectively punishing our sickest people.
What's been mentioned for taking care of the sick are what are known as high-risk pools. And what the high-risk pools are going to do is take everybody who is at high risk, just like it suggests, pool them together, and then they are going to cost a ton more money. Because a lot of folks say, well, I don't want to pay for other people's health care, right? So you put the healthy and the sick in the same pool, and the costs even out. You put the healthy in one pool, you put the sick in another pool, and the healthy pool's not going to pay much, and the sick pool is probably going to die waiting for care. So that's not a good solution, nor is that a good Christian solution. It's amazing to me how much of a role religion has played, or supposedly played, in this whole discussion. There's an article in the Washington Post, the headline, Islamic State magazine steers followers to U.S. gun shows for easy access to weapons. In August, a former Islamic State recruit caused a stir when he described how the terrorist organization sought to exploit America's gun laws. They say that Americans are dumb. They have open gun policies, the recruit told the New York Times from a German prison. They say we can radicalize them easy, and if they have no prior record, they can buy guns so that we don't need to have a contact man to buy guns for them. The Islamic State puts out a magazine, and it used to be known as Dabiq, and it is now known as Rumia. And in that magazine, and I haven't read my Rumia lately, and I was for a while, but in that magazine, they tell you, U.S. gun laws are dumb. Go get you some guns and kill lots of people. That's what the Orlando shooter did. Right? Although his reasoning, we're not entirely clear about. But here's what we have right now. The United States Republican Party, U.S. conservatives, defending a policy that will lead to more people being murdered. More people being murdered in their homes, more people being murdered in their classrooms with this open gun policy, and they're doing it under the guise of protection. U.S. conservatives backing more war in Afghanistan, war in North Korea, maybe start things up in Iraq again, hell, let's invade Vietnam, or what? More killing, more war. And then when it comes to our health care, once again, they go, hey, how about supporting a system that helps fewer people and kills lots more people? Doesn't that sound fantastic? Christian principles, and I remember learning about these. You know, when you hurt, I hurt. You know, when you do well, I do well. So how we have such an industry where, first of all, a political party, and then an entire industry that benefits off of the murder of people, and the fact that that industry believes that they get to call themselves Christian is insane to me.
Every great religion in the world, Christianity, Judaism, Islam, Buddhism, essentially comes down to do unto others as you would like them to do unto you. And what I have believed in my whole life, I believed it when I was a 22-year-old kid getting arrested in Chicago fighting segregation. I believed it in my whole life, that we are in this together, not just not words. The truth is, at some level, when you hurt, when your children hurt, I hurt. I hurt. And when my kids hurt, you hurt. And it's very easy to turn our backs on kids who are hungry or veterans who are sleeping out in the street, and we can develop a psyche, a psychology, which says, I don't have to worry about them. All I'm going to worry about myself. I need to make another $5 billion. But I believe that what human nature is about is that everybody in this room impacts everybody else in all kinds of ways that we can't even understand. It's beyond intellect.
That is what a Christian sounds like. That's what somebody sounds like when they're doing the Lord's work. Here's what somebody sounds like when they're not doing the Lord's work. And right now, Trump is speaking at Liberty University at a commencement speech. Quoting here from Ed Mazza's article, evangelical leader Jerry Falwell, an early backer of Donald Trump, enthusiastically praised the president's first 100 day in office. I think evangelicals have found their dream president, he said, when he was on Fox News, a Fox News program called Justice with Judge Jeanine. Falwell cited reuniting Israel with America and appointing people of faith throughout the administration as the reason evangelicals in general remain highly supportive of Trump. Falwell also trashed moderate Republicans who he said make his blood boil. Honestly, I have more respect for Democrats than I do for moderate Republicans, he said. At least Democrats admit what they believe and they say it up front. And at least you know who you're dealing with. Last year, Falwell faced a mutiny at Liberty University, the school where he serves as president, over his support for Trump. Trump is a dream president for evangelicals.
She said, so one of my students' aunts had to go pick up her daughter from school today because a boy grabbed her vagina. She's 10. When asked why, he said that if a president can do it, I can do it. Day one. And Sean King comments, this is from a school teacher. I have dozens just like this of young girls who had their crotches grabbed yesterday in the name of Donald Trump.
He is a dream candidate. He is a dream president. Dream. A dream for evangelicals.
Hail Trump. Hail our people. Hail victory.
I think you see where I'm going with this. What the dream should be is you have somebody taking care of the sick. What the dream should be for evangelicals is you have somebody feeding the poor. What the dream should be for evangelicals is you have somebody housing the homeless. What the dream should be for evangelicals, and I understand this is falling on deaf ears for you folks, because it's not starting a war, it's not making somebody richer, it's not killing tons of people, and so therefore it's not doing what Jesus really wanted us to do, was to make health insurance CEOs richer, to make military contractors richer, to kill tons and tons. Because it's not doing any of that stuff, well, then it's not really doing the Lord's work. Jesus also hired 8 Goldman Sachs bankers to his cabinet, because that's what Jesus really believed in. All this charity and crap and feeding them. They have their dream president with this guy. And that is why Donald Trump is not going to make it through the rest of the year. And it's also why, as I predicted roughly at this time last year, actually probably 14, 15 months ago, that Donald Trump is going to kill the Republican Party. This war, death, inequality, massively expanding deficits, all of this stuff is just going to, that's going to be the tipping point. And people are going to stop buying into this crap. And if what Christians really believe is what the Donald and what the GOP and what these war profiteers are saying, that's really what they believe, then you're not just going to not survive as a party, you're also not going to survive as a religion. And let me take it one step further. You're not going to survive as a human being. And if you keep this up, we're not going to survive as a country. We're on recess right now. And this Republican Congress is taking a lot of recesses because they're not interested in working. They're just interested in collecting a check. And they're not anticipating that check coming from you, which is why they're not worried about meeting with us right now. They've got big donors that will continue to pay for their reelection efforts, and they've got plenty of you, the rubes, that will continue to vote for them, even though they're not representing you. But this kind of thing, it's not going to last forever. And I'm seeing it go away right now. I'm seeing it fold before my very eyes. And I couldn't be happier about that. I'm looking forward to the end of the GOP. And I'm looking forward to the end of what is referred to as the prosperity gospel. Because that has nothing to do with helping people. It's nothing to do with feeding or housing or any of that. It's greed, killing. And it's amazing to me that it's lasted this long. Hold on. Be strong. We're going to get there, folks. I understand that this may not be what you thought winning was going to look like. But for us, the same, this is what winning looks like. Thank you for being here on The Fire You Can't Put Out. Our official home is tfycpo.podbean.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/tfycpo. Listen on the go. Just download the Podbean app at the iTunes Store or at the Google Play Store for Android users. Individual episodes are available for download at the iTunes Store. Just search for The Fire You Can't Put Out. There, you can also subscribe so that you never miss an episode. Questions, comments, or hate mail, just a general statement or inquiry, just email it to tfycpo@gmail.com. We work hard to not only inform and entertain, but also keep an open dialogue with our growing listener base. So feel free to reach out to us. And as always, thank you for listening. We are the fire you can't put out, and we will prevail, rejecting austerity in favor of prosperity. Special thanks to Kevin for producing, and special thanks to you for listening. This is Melvin, signing off. And now that I've woken you up, good morning.